Full Service Radio is proudly supported and hosted by Simplecast, the easiest way for a podcast creator to publish and distribute audio on the internet. For more information, visit Simplecast.com.
Recorded live from the lobby of the Line Hotel in Adams Morgan, Washington, D.C.
Friends, welcome to Shift Drink on Full Service Radio, broadcasting live from the Line Hotel in Adams Morgan, Washington, D.C. I'm Matthew Ramsey, Wiley Coyote, Cheeseburger Life Coach, and Cold Beer Cheerleader.
I'm Eddie Kim, proud DCist and perpetual purveyor of Popeye's Chicken.
I've heard rumors the sandwich is back.
It is back. Yes, it is back.
I was looking for it on Uber Eats this morning. There was not a category for the chicken sandwich.
I had a hankering for Popeye's chicken last night. Thank God I didn't go because I think it came back yesterday. And we probably avoided some interestingly long lines.
I'm guessing it still needs pickles, though. That's the thing.
Have you had it, Johnny?
Yes, only once.
Yeah. Did it need pickles? Did it need more sauce?
I don't know, it sat in the bag for like an hour, but I still enjoyed it. I had a server who was running late, and he's like, I'm sorry I'm late, but it's because I was waiting in line to get the Popeye's chicken sandwich. So I was like, all right, I'll let it slide this time.
That's like...
He said he was getting it for me, but I think he's just like, shit, yeah, I'm going to give it to Johnny.
Should get so one get more?
Back. Yeah.
Well, we do have our guest this week is Mr. Johnny Sparrow of Reverie. Also, Netflix star.
Oh God, I forgot about that.
Yeah, so did I.
You have a laundry list, but essentially a chef culinaire. Also, did I see recently? Were you in Culinaire?
Art Culinaire.
God damn it, that magazine is like one of my favorites.
Yeah, it's. I always ask like young cooks to like, I'm like, do you see that? They're like, they don't know what Art Culinaire is, but it's been around since like the 1980s, and it's like one of the most well put together culinary periodicals. That, like, I mean,
yeah.
There's so many, like, new magazines that come out constantly, and they don't last more than a year. And the fact that Art Culinaire puts out four or six issues a year.
Yeah.
And they're still kicking after, you know, whatever, like, 30-plus years. Mm-hmm. It's pretty cool.
And it's a hardcover zine, essentially. Or I guess periodical is probably a better way of putting it.
I just like saying that word because it makes me sound smart.
I mean, it was one of those OG kind of tabletop.
Yeah. But they, I mean, I remember, like, looking and I had, like, the best chefs in Denmark, like, back in an issue. And, like, oh, it's like, oh. Why would I ever be in this? Because it's like the best chefs in the world. And then they send me a message and they're like, yeah, we want to feature Reverie. You know, I was like,
how awesome is that?
Like, how low you've sunk. I mean,
this used to be so good.
No, I mean, it's,
it's so cool though.
I think
man.
It's like one of the things that I always says, like, I don't really have much in Amigo. Cause like, not to say none of that stuff means like nothing to me. Like, it's just cool. It's exposure for the restaurant. It's fun. It just, I don't know. I don't think like I'm better than anybody because I got into that. It's just rad that this magazine that I literally had on my bookshelf for like years. I'm
yeah.
Like, shit, now I'm in it. Like we put up on the restaurant because when you open up the front cover, it's like me opening up the door of Reverie and it's really.
Super cool.
Yeah. So it's awesome. It still hasn't hit yet. Like I'm still, I guarantee like in a year, I'll be like, oh yeah, I did all that stuff.
Ah, it's so exciting. I mean, that was a book or magazine, whatever the fuck it is, that like. In culinary school, I would stay after class and I would read that in the fucking library and it would, like I was writing down all the recipes I could from it to like
oh, that's
it just
adorable.
Super inspiring. So that's a huge deal, man. Congratulations.
Yeah. Did they have photocopies back when you photocopiers?
Okay, all right. This is like maybe
the carbon paper. We just like rub it over top of
yeah.
it.
Yeah, I was doing grave rubbings on
yeah.
it.
Yeah, yeah. If you haven't seen it, it's Art Culinaire issue 132.
Wow.
This is a Shift Drink podcast episode.
71.
71, yeah.
Yeah.
So we found you earlier than Art Culinaire. Oh, goodness gracious.
Wow. What a blast.
That was a good one, right?
I'm looking for your reaction.
Johnny, you asked for some seltzer.
Yeah. I don't know. And then I got this shit.
Bubbly water.
Yeah. So Johnny is
yeah.
joining a long line of industry folks who aren't drinking.
Yeah.
On the show. And so, yeah, seltzer water. So I found this seltzer water. It's a great find, I think. It's from Polar Springs Junior Line, so it's specifically marketed for children.
You gotta get them young.
there's a dragon on it.
I know I'm little and I can probably still shop at like Kids R Us, but I think I can drink like LaCroix and grown-up seltzer too, I think.
Yeah.
Well, this is
6 ounces.
It's calorie-free. The flavor is called Dragon Whispers.
Yeah, inspired.
Gliding above the green mountains, these golden-winged creatures. What is it supposed to taste like?
I'm getting black cherry off of this one.
It tastes like really bad grape, Concord grape.
I'll take it though.
So yeah. The flavor itself is Dragon Whispers, and I believe the other one that was available at the CVS was like Mermaid Tears or something.
Ooh. So.
I don't know. Well, thank you.
I bet that's kiwi strawberry.
Yeah, makes sense.
Get them early. Oh God, hook them early. So yeah, that was our shift drink of the week.
Johnny, do you have a preferred bubbly?
I mean, I probably every service drink at least like 2 bottles of San Pellegrino.
I feel like that's like, it's a perk of working in our business is that there's usually like ample supplies of sparkling water.
Yeah, I
on
mean.
On demand.
And it's always there. Like every shift, everyone knows on the pass, put a bottle of San Pellegrino. And then that's why I drink like all service. I don't know if everyone always tells me that's probably why I'm dehydrated all the time because I just drink mineral water. Maybe I should try some of that tap stuff, but.
I've said this before, but I think that tap water or still water is just like stale sparkling water. Just sparkling water that's quite flat.
Is that the sparkling water of choice at Reverie?
It certainly is.
Okay.
Now,
I feel like it's like an important thing that people spend a lot of time deciding. Well, I wish people spend a lot of time deciding exactly the still water bottle still. Sparkling.
I feel like there's more options now. Like it was like Badois and like San Pellegrino, but then there's like what is it like Mountain Valley? There's a whole bunch. Yeah. There's a lot out there.
There's
now.
One from Spain. Yeah. That I know the folks at Maxwell Park use.
Do you guys like do the machine or?
No, we just straight bottles.
Yeah. We had a big debate going on at Pineapple and Pearls. Do you in order to make the San Pellegrino list? Do you have to serve the water?
I don't think so. I mean, we never will. So, like, that's not why I'm like, I'm not like buying into like this top 100 shit. I'll never make it. But
that's a direct quote from Culinaire, right?
Yeah, exactly. No, I mean, we use it because I'm trying to remember like if they approached me or I approached them, and I'd always use them. But they also have like a great network for like helping with marketing for all these events. So most of the guest chef dinners that we do are sponsored or in a small part by San Pellegrino.
Oh, interesting.
So they help us bring chefs in and like do all that stuff like that. They help out with that. But I mean, it's like they would do some menu placement. It's just like a collaboration with them. But I started using them before any of that. Sorry, this is seltzer water.
Yeah. It's a little,
the burps.
Please, no burping on the microphone.
No, that's why I backed off. No, I don't know if you have to like buy into that and like sell it in order to get on that list, because I guarantee there's a lot of restaurants that don't do it, but I don't know. That's not why we did it. I just like the taste. It's like the proper amount of bubble size. It's proper.
Eddie, are you a Topo fan? Is that what you're...
I do drink quite a bit of Topo.
Yeah.
That's mostly good. Because the bottles are very reusable.
Yeah.
For bartenders, very...
I desire the big bubbles. I like the burn.
Yeah.
That's what I crave.
For all of the collaboration dinners that you do, so yeah, I didn't realize that Pellegrino helps facilitate those.
Yeah.
But you, at the end of the day, you choose the folks that you bring in because like it seems like they're your friends. Natural combinations of whatever cooking that you do.
Yeah, I mean it's some of them are like people that I've known for a while or through like the power of social media. We've all become friends. Like some of the people I never even met until they showed up at my restaurant, but it was just like on Instagram, you see these people and you constantly like them and you comment, like actually have like conversations. You're like, well, shit, do you just want to come to my restaurant and cook and see how it goes? And that's pretty much how 70% of all those dinners happen. Like the guys from Long Oven who were just Bon Appetit's best restaurant.
Yeah.
I just like, they were our first ever. They'll always be remembered as my first.
That's fucking awesome.
We just liked each other's stuff on Instagram and I was like, hey, like we want to start doing this year. Do you guys want to come up and do it? They literally drove up that day.
Yeah, they're based out of Richmond.
Yeah. I mean, it was like easy, like pretty easy trip, but they drove up in the morning. We did the dinner and then they drove right back down, like, because they're like, we got to open the restaurant tomorrow.
You're right.
They were, I think, maybe not even a year at that point. So they were still new, figuring out their stuff. And had guys from Philly, New York. We've got some guys from London coming this month. And then we got some some heavy hitters coming in December too, just trying to like, I think we have 4 dinners in December, just trying to go pretty hard at the end of the year.
Has this always been something that you've kind of wanted to bake into your ethos as far as, cause, I mean, it seems like it's looking back at your history and even with like Columbia Room and you kind of...
I think one of the biggest things that I've taken away from just like my career, like the only reason I've gotten as far as I have is because other chefs have opened their door and let me go in, whether it's for a week or a month or a year. And I think building that network and just showing people like what it's like to, you know, be in Europe and work at this restaurant in Copenhagen, that I mean, everyone's like, oh, it's impossible to get in. I was like, no, just write him an email and see what happens.
But yeah.
Now I have like this network of people that I've been able to go cook in their restaurants and bring them here. And most of my cooks may never have that opportunity. I mean, it's not like I'm, you know, a trust fund baby and I have had like all this money. Like I had to invest in these moments of my life and able to do that. And
yeah.
Obviously getting a lot out of it now, but having these chefs come in from like New York and all over the place, these, my cooks who are still very new, like very new to the industry, are able to, rather than travel, you know, 3 hours by train in New York to meet these people or go to London or Europe, like, they're coming to the restaurant and they're able to like cook with them,
rub shoulders with some pretty cool people.
Yeah, because it's not like they bring like their whole team with them. They need my team to help them. So I was like, okay, 2 people with me, the rest of you with that team, and they just like, they basically work in a different restaurant for the entire day, even though they haven't left Reverie, which is cool. And then they meet these people and they become friends, and like, it doesn't, I always tell them, like, they ever reach out and they need like hands and you need to move to Chicago, like, just take it. Like, I'm the last person that would ever stop an opportunity like to better yourself. Like, if that comes from the conversation, then fucking go for it. Like, don't hold back. I'm not gonna be like, you're dead to me,
right?
Because that's not how it works.
That's not how it works at all.
Shouldn't.
Well, before we dig too far into conversations here, let's do a little week in review.
Yeah.
Some big things happened in the district this last week.
In the district specifically, what happened in the district?
Sports thing. World something
thing happened.
Sports ball.
Johnny, your former boss, threw a baseball out over a pentagon-shaped plate. I didn't watch it. Was it a strike?
I don't know.
No, I mean, there were videos of him practicing.
He looks good with the beard. That's all I know.
Yes.
That was my takeaway from
Silver Fox.
I don't know how he threw the ball, but I do know he has.
He looks good doing it. That's all that matters.
He's preparing for Santa Claus. His next role is Santa Claus after he wins the Peace Prize.
How was? I mean, it was electric in DC over the weekend. With
it was big. The parade was on Saturday.
Yeah,
super cool showing there. It was very.
Service was definitely like lacking after like say 8 o'clock or 8:07 every night, like. I don't know. We'd see a decline in numbers because everybody would be at home watching the
game. Oh, watching the game. Oh, yeah. So I was in New York and I watched them win at the end of game 7 in a bar in Brooklyn. I'm just going to say, people in Brooklyn kind of suck when it comes to watching sports. They just don't give a fuck. And it was just like kind of like a weird mood and people were making fun of us for cheering. It's like, shut up. This is the World Series. I'm sorry your team didn't make it.
That's odd. Like they just like, they were like booing you guys for like...
Showing
enthusiasm for DC.
Yeah, and we were in the Crown Heights, and it was definitely not a sports bar. They had a TV, so you had to put it on.
So
that was my experience.
You were up in New York, and this is you were talking about the zero star review that Peter Luger received,
and at the same that right when I was there, it was a zero star review.
I was up there because I was at Star Chef's for like
Star Chef's.
On.
Yeah.
A lot of DC folks were up in New York this past week, so if anyone saw it on your Instagram feeds, just took over the entire city. But that was when on Wednesday Pete Wells.
Yeah.
Won 0 star review of Peter Luger's.
Yeah, just kind of.
Have you ever eaten there?
I haven't, but like. Being up there with like a lot of my New York friends, they're like, it's not to say it wasn't justified, but that no one's ever said anything bad about that place. And I don't think it's like one of those, it's like a sacred place you can't like badmouth. But I think everyone's always gone there and enjoyed. Like, I have a ton of friends like in New York, they talk about the places they go eat. And it's not always like those 3 Michelin star restaurants, but I feel like Peter Luger is always on that list because it is exactly what it is. Like, it's not,
it's an establishment,
yeah. But I know there's a lot of people in the industry who are like a little upset by like what was said. I mean, again, like it's a restaurant that's been open for how many years?
I'm not even gonna count. But like so Pete Wells, his one line that's been kind of quoted around is, after I paid, there is an unshakable sense that
I've been scammed. Yeah,
and sure, yeah. That I think that's, people are looking for value in a lot of their dining
buyer's
these days,
remorse.
And like, okay, yeah,
yeah. I mean, I guess it's like the Emperor's New Clothes. Like, if someone tells you it's good, you're like, yeah, you're right, this is great, this is amazing. But if, like, when you actually get down to it, you're like, I didn't enjoy myself, then sure, like, yeah, you shouldn't feel good about paying for it. But I don't know if it's, they just overthink what it is, like, as an institution. It's been around for, like, over, like, 80 years or whatever it may have been. Like, one, there's no, I don't know any restaurants that have lasted a length of time, like, in the States, as long as, like, those old school steakhouses. But I don't know.
They'll do fine.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They'll do fine. No one's going to order the fish there anymore, apparently. No.
if they lasted this long, I doubt, like, one review. If anything, like, it's probably going to, it probably did, not to say there's...
Bring in new talent.
People just want to see, like, I want to see what this is about. Where the people that have supported it, they're not going to want that to affect the business. They're like, yeah, let's just go.
Or people who just have never heard of it before. Yeah. Yeah.
I was also in New York this last week and actually got to sit at the bar at the Nomad, which I'd never done before. You're a burger guy. Have you had the burger at the
Nomad? I haven't. I've only ever had drinks there.
It was awesome.
The Nomad burger. How do they do it?
It's dry-aged. It's super simple. Like, they had essentially burger sauce and pickles, and like, that's it. It was great. Onions.
Enough pickles?
I think onions, actually.
What was the shape of the pickle?
It was a smaller burger. but honestly, I had to eat in secret because I was about to go meet a friend before dinner. But I was like, I'm here. I gotta fucking try this. But it was great.
I had the Momofuku Ko, the bar burger. The one they do, like, in the... It's like the Martin's potato, like the roll, like the hot dog bone.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was interesting. It was good. But it wasn't like a traditional burger in that sense.
I snuck in a superiority burger when I was up there. So
I'm glad we were all doing our things.
Time to do it.
Yeah.
Well, I was like,
YOLO.
Everyone always talks about the Reverie Burger. It's like, we'll do a little bit of R&D and I'll write it off.
Like, right. Yeah, that's right. It's all about the taxes.
Yeah.
On the local side, so this is pretty wild. Call your mother. They're flexing their doughy bagel muscle.
This is in your neighborhood
now.
I know.
Into Georgetown, which... I would think would be exciting for Georgetown.
For me, like, especially being somebody who is new to the Georgetown area and trying to breathe a little bit of life into it, and at least from a culinary standpoint. Like,
right.
I know there's a lot of shops and there's a lot of stuff going on. And I mean, I know how difficult it is to open a restaurant in Georgetown. Like, the neighbors, they want that neighborhood to stay, like, a very specific way. But if it's for the betterment of the neighborhood, like, I don't think it's going to be... There's not going to be lines down Wisconsin all the way to M Street. I mean, you already have GW kids running amok. Like, what's wrong about having, like, a really
they've forever run amok there. But also, yeah, I mean, like, so the ANC has already proved everything, and Jack Evans is kind of flexing back.
One of the council members, Jack Evans, is who himself is in a little bit of a quagmire.
is saying that it's going to bring rats to the neighborhood, essentially, which I think might make for a wonderful Halloween costume next year. Bagel rat.
Bagel rat.
What was you have a 1 year old now, Fiona. What was her costume?
We dressed up as the Ninja Turtles.
Yeah, you got to do the family thing.
Yeah, that's so it's funny. Like, everyone always talks about it, and you don't really realize until it happens. But I haven't given a shit about, like, Halloween or any holiday since I was, like, in elementary school.
You're breaking my heart, Johnny.
I just don't do it. But I think, like, in elementary school, I dressed up as Pee Wee Herman twice and then a Ninja Turtle.
So you're already repeating.
Yeah. But so yeah, I'm not really that creative.
Can you do a laugh for me?
What's that?
The laugh.
I can.
No, do it.
No,
do it. No, do it.
It's been too long. No, but Alexis wanted to dress up as a family, so our dog Nacho was like a little terrier, so he was Splinter.
Oh
yeah.
Yeah, I saw the pictures.
It was so great. Good. Nacho. But yeah. I haven't wanted to dress up in forever, and then as soon as she's like, we're gonna dress up as a family, I was like, you're goddamn right we are. So I didn't go to work. Went home. She, like, made our costumes for us. We didn't buy them. Like, she made all the shells. It was pretty wild. But we came here.
Nice. Yeah. Was it spooky? It looked like...
It was real spooky.
Okay.
No, I think spooky. It was just... The lobby looked exactly the same. I don't think there was that much difference. Okay. there was some candy. And, like, we got here and then got right out. Went to Two Amy's and ate pizza.
Nice.
As a good Ninja Turtle would do.
Eddie, were you in D.C. for Halloween? Did you dress up?
Halloween was on Thursday?
Friday.
Thursday.
Right. I had just gotten off a bus from New York, so I was not in any kind of mood.
I dressed up. So every year at Tail Up, there's a theme as designated by Bill Jensen. And this year's theme was Disney villains.
Oh.
Which is cool.
Yeah.
Except for the caveat that you couldn't be Marvel or Star Wars.
Okay.
Oh, so okay, now I understand.
So in true villainous form, I went as Darth Thanos. But I'd never worked service in costume before, and service was just as intense, but like I had less pockets. I had a weird infinity gauntlet, and there's more capes involved. It was really hard.
More capes.
Yeah, more,
like more than used to, yeah.
And nobody, like, I'd say most of my tables didn't even acknowledge that it was Halloween. Like, I'm standing there dressed like Thanos, and they're like asking for the salt cod.
So yeah. Emily's did the same thing. I saw a picture of Bill Lumberg. I didn't know it was Elizabeth.
Elizabeth.
I didn't know it was her.
So, yeah, Elizabeth dressed like Bill Lumberg from the boss from...
really?
It was so good.
From Office Space. Yeah.
And I didn't see that.
God, it was so good. It was so good, and she nailed it. But she had the ring, the coffee mug, the watch, the everything.
Okay.
Shift drink. We were talking about shift drink.
Oh, should we talk about more news?
Oh, what you got?
Oh, I wanted to go back up to New York. I wanted to mention some big news that came out, at least in the beverage world. And it's something everyone should read. The New York Times came out with an article on Friday about the title, A Celebrity Sommelier is Accused of Sexual Assault. I'm not even going to, you know, respect this guy and give him his name, but he's worked at Bestia, Animal, and Exla in L.A. He currently works at The Usual up in New York. And so Marissa Ross, the editor at... wine editor at Bon Appetit magazine, she helped quite a bit on identifying a lot of people, helped a lot of people come forward for this article and identifying someone who has pretty much been a terror on both sides of the, accused of being a terror on both sides of the coast. So everyone definitely please take a read of the article.
Also, one more thing, because we just talked about this right before, and I want to get Johnny's perspective on this. The foie ban in New York City.
Oh, yeah.
2020. Mm-hmm. Where do you fall on foie?
2022.
Oh, that's right.
So we still got a couple years.
I don't know. I mean, we don't use a ton of foie, and I don't think I ever have. Like, we have one dish that we use it as, like, one of our... It's a petit four at the end of the meal, so it's not like we base our entire, like, cuisine on, like, doing, like, a whole foie load. But I think the thing that I look at is, like, because we do a whole duck at the restaurant, and that's where we get our foie from as well. And looking at how it affects that farmer, like, I understand, like, this is... I don't know. It's... I mean, I've never been to the farm or seen how they, like... feed the ducks, and I know it's about the treatment of them, but I think it's kind of like bullshit. It's they're not, I don't think the whole force feeding as everyone assumes it to be from like the videos is always the case. If anything, like I feel like this guy is, like, maybe not just this guy in particular, but everybody in that in like the duck farming industry is a little bit more responsible. I mean, when you look at like, all the other,
I think it has such stigma that
yeah.
You, in this day and age, you like any of those videos, those are from either like early days Canada or like what was the other one? I mean, it might be France, honestly, but like the huge like.
Yeah, I remember like watching like the pig slaughter videos and stuff like that. Like, and that's and that's why we don't buy commodity pork and stuff like that. And I think doing that for whatever reason, I understand like the ethics behind it is like it's like force feeding and things like that. But I don't know, it like affects like these farmers, like this is their livelihood, and I don't entirely know if they're doing it right or wrong because I'm not like a foie gras, like an expert on the appropriate way to do it, but. I don't know. I feel like it's been banned and reformed and changed. Like, I mean, there was the ban in California not so long ago, and that's gone now, right? Or is it still?
I think it's on a temporary pause. I think it's going to come back. Or something.
Yeah,
I don't know.
I feel like if they're going to take a stand on that, they should look at every other farming practice, and we should just put everything under that under the microscope.
Exactly.
Like chicken, pork, even vegetables. Like nobody. I mean,
any of your big industry
seafood.
Protein.
Seafood's got like some of the worst like culprits as far as like. Just like treatment, like mislabeling, like that should be the shit that we put our energy towards, not that.
And over farming and all that stuff, or overfishing. I mean, I've done some research on these things, but ironically, most of the sustainable, like, foie that, like, I mean, that's humanely raised foie essentially is coming out of Hudson Valley, which is like, it's just a couple hours north.
I mean, that's where we get our serum.
Yeah.
We get it.
And that, honestly, that's most of the foie in the U.S. comes from Hudson Valley. And they, for the most part, really give a shit. And you can go online. They encourage you to take tours and all that stuff. But yeah, I just think it's interesting. I mean, like anything else, I think moderation is kind of where it's at. But foie is fucking delicious. And it will be missed. All right, well, let's play a little game we call Two Truths, One Lie.
Two Truths, One Lie.
All right, Johnny.
I didn't really put a lot of thought into this. I was trying, well, I'm really good at like not overthinking things because I think it sounds too scripted and not real. So two truths and a lie, in no particular order. I was on the varsity water polo team. I am a triplet, and bubblegum makes me want to throw up.
Ooh. Okay.
I know he's a triplet.
I know he's a triplet.
Well, because most people assume it's just me and my brother, but there's a lady involved in it too, so it's two boys and a girl.
Which I think going back to the Halloween thing would have made for some very easy like team costumes.
Yeah, I also always went as my brother for Halloween. I just always wore "Hello, my name is Bobby," and everyone's like, "You piece of shit." I was like, "It's real. I'm not me." That was the only yeah.
Bubble gum. I'm trying to think.
Wait, what was the third thing?
The varsity water polo.
Varsity, but that was the first.
That was the first one, and then bubble gum makes me want to throw up.
Oh yeah, right. This kind of tastes like bubble gum. Didn't make you throw up.
That's a good point. That's a good point. Let's go
wait,
varsity.
Wait, Johnny, you grew up in the area.
Right? I did. I grew up in Phoenix, Maryland, right below the yes. right south of the Pennsylvania. I think
would they have is water polo big in this area?
I don't know, man. You grew up around here.
I know, but it was mostly track and field.
Ugh. I think varsity is a lie. Not that you're not athletic, Johnny. You're built like a brick house, but I feel like bubblegum. I feel like your palate is open to bubblegum. Eddie disagrees with me.
I have no idea.
Okay.
Yeah, I think yeah.
So wait, which one's the lie?
Water polo is a lie.
Water polo is the lie.
Yeah.
Wait, what? Oh, that's a great sound effect. Is it true?
That bubblegum makes me sick?
Yeah.
No, but yeah, I will throw up if I like...
Oh, so we got it right.
Yeah, no, you said you're right. You said water polo is yes. a lie. So it's you said two truths and a lie. So the two truths were the triplet
Alexia was on top of that.
Gum. Good
and
work, guys.
And the lie was the water polo.
Nice.
I don't know why. Thanks, I was Alexia. Trying to think of the most random thing. I'm like, water polo is pretty random. No, ever since I was younger, I remember, I mean, it happened at lunch one day when I was like in second grade and this person was just chewing bubblegum. And like, even to like this day, like watch people chew gum or like throw it on the street or like... Anywhere?
Wait, what happened?
Oh, I just puked in my like lunch tray. They were eating lunch and I was like, and I kept telling them like stop, and they're like, I'm like stop it, and they're like, and they kept going and going. I was like, bruh! And just like all over the lunch tray. I don't know, for some reason like anything you chew you don't swallow. I mean that shit's weird to me.
I feel like this is like fodder for any of your haters out there, man. They can just come in and just like start.
There was also a time when I was like in third grade. I remember my sister was chewing gum and like it pulled out like three of her baby teeth, and like that image still like sticks to my head.
Oh, any therapists out there? Wow. We need to solve this.
I don't have any right problems. Away. You have problems. This is opening up a lot of stuff. I feel comfortable. Yeah, I don't know. It's always bothered me. I don't know. If your breath stinks, eat a mint.
Whoa.
Shots fired. Was that aggressive?
Whoa. Yeah, I think so. Well, you're just forcing people to have a Mentos? Jeez.
I didn't say... Well, I mean, I prefer Altoids, but that's personal.
Mentos, products. Yeah, it still feels like that kind of chewy category.
Yeah, it's too chewy.
Toffee? Like any... Is it sticky stuff?
No, it's just bubble gum in general. I feel like anything that you have to chew and then, like, just keep going and going and going, and then you have to... No, please.
No. No, I'm gonna break this up a little bit.
What about the flavor top, like Dolin Blanc Vermouth? Like when you get that kind of like bubblegummy taste, is that?
No, it's not so much the flavor that gets me. Okay. It's the thought of it. It's the thought of it.
All right, well, what brought to mind for me is like one of your favorite dishes, and we've talked about this, is the chuleta.
Yeah.
Which is it's a little bit of a toothsome cut of meat. Yeah, and you gotta chew on it.
But you swallow it eventually. You don't just spit it out into a trash can or ask for like a napkin.
In the
just
end, put it on your table. In the end, you get there. Yeah.
Do you get a lot of bubble gum underneath your tables?
No, and
in restaurants,
I can't sit at a table if there's bubble gum. I like move away to the other side of the restaurant.
But at your restaurant, like do you flip it under every now and then? Yeah,
I check every table. And every table I check, I like we were just getting coffee, and I checked underneath the table before I sat down.
Do you really?
Yeah.
Wow, what a life.
Sorry.
Why do you think I'm not scooting? I don't know what's going on through here.
There's no gum under this table I'm checking currently. That's amazing.
This is great.
But let's bring it back to Gilletta. this is something that you kind of discovered, I think, in your stage when you were in San Sebastian.
That is correct.
Most famous for at Bar Nestor.
Yeah.
I have been to San Sebastian. This is like, that's all they serve there, essentially, right?
They have like five menu items. Oh, I think. Okay. So it's like chuleta. They have one tortilla that they make at the beginning of the day, and then it's gone. Tomatoes with salt and olive oil, like fried Padron peppers, and then little sandwiches with jamón ibérico and like manchego, okay. And that's it.
Yes. Okay. So I definitely recognize the sign, and like, I feel like I was in there, but I didn't have.
They have like a window, and you can eat, or like a little ledge at a window, and you can eat at that. You eat there. Yeah. They'll do the, you know. Yeah. Then they have all the beverages. They'll do the high pour of chocolate if you want, and it's amazing. Thank you. I went to San Sebastian a couple years ago, and Johnny guided me through the streets. Thank you.
Yeah. I mean, that's still like, of all the places I could go, like travel in the world. Like, so I just want to keep going back.
Yeah.
Like,
when was the last time you were over there?
2016. It's actually, so I returned to DC end of 2015. In 2016, we went, me, Alexis, and I went there, and that's actually where I proposed to her.
Oh.
So I found like the cheapest flight. It took us like 27 hours to get there. Yeah. And then we stayed in my, my friend had an apartment. She's like, I'll sleep on the sofa. You guys take the bed. So I didn't have to pay for a hotel. I mean, I wasn't making any money at that point. I was like consulting and was making like $35,000 a year. I was,
right.
Like, so bought her a ring on Etsy. Took her to San Sebastian, made her go for like a hike up this hill for like 3 hours. She was like so jacked on like adrenaline. I couldn't get her to calm down to like propose to her. And like right before we did like this hike, we went to this like Bodega de Nostaria and had like pig face salad, like tortillas, like all the shit you don't want to eat before you go for like a really
right.
But yeah, that was the last time I was back. I'm trying to. I want to. Oh. I mean, I would like to take a vacation like early next year.
Hey, you've earned it, man.
Yeah, we'll see. I mean, Fiona, we took her to California for my brother's wedding, and we were like fly out, and she like did better on the plane than I did.
Yeah.
It's like 6 hours straight, so we want to start traveling with her a little bit more and take her there. I mean, that's like such like an important place to me, and I didn't really think that. I mean, I think growing up as a cook, you're like Japan and France and like Spain for me, like even like only going there later in my career, like with Jose, it was like, yeah, this shit has like influenced me more than I ever thought.
Right.
And it's just such a cool city too. Like, you can just hop from like restaurant to restaurant to restaurant, and it's like super low key. I mean, you got
throw your dirty napkins on the floor.
Yeah, no one gives a shit. You eat dinner at like 9 o'clock. The restaurant's closed at 11. Like the window is like, because everyone takes siestas all day.
Yeah.
It's like, it's the dream. Not really. I think it would drive me crazy if I didn't show up to work till like 7 o'clock and then I was done by midnight. It'd be weird.
Now, where was Captain Cappy's?
Cappy's wasn't.
Was that, where was that in this window? Was that before?
That was after. So
after, okay.
I as soon as I got back, I was kind of like farting around, trying to like, I knew I wanted to open up a restaurant. Like Reverie was already kind of like, at least in existence. Like I had it on paper what I ideally wanted it to be, and then I was kind of talking to Nick Pimentel and Paul, and they mentioned how they were transforming the old Korean Turtle space into a crab shack. And then it was like, I don't think my name was ever meant to really be like 100% associated with it. It was just like, yeah, I'm from Baltimore. Like, I've cooked crabs. Let's do it. And it was, I mean, I just gotten back from like one of like the most experimental restaurants. And then I was like back to like 16-year-old Johnny, like slinging crab cakes and French fries. And,
right.
Which was like a nice departure from what I knew, but it was also like very, very difficult. Like, as creative,
I mean, that was the summer, right? Where you would just go home and everything smelled like crab spice. And
yeah, it was not like, I think I just got some of that smell out of some of my t-shirts. It's like an insane amount of sweat in Old Bay, which for most is, they're like, that sounds fantastic.
Yeah, it's part of the seasoning.
Yeah, but not like when you lay down in bed, you're like, look, this is all I smell. But yeah, that was like right when me and Alexis started dating. We're like, all right, she ran the front of the house, I ran the back of the house. We got Nacho at the same time. So Nacho like grew up eating crab shells.
Yeah.
That's why he's like hard as shit right now.
That's why he looks like Master Splinter.
Yeah. But that was interesting. I mean, it was not built to like put out like steamed crabs. Like, it wasn't like we had like a big steamer. I had like a six, like the same, like when you went to Himitsu, it was that same setup. And we had these pots that were just like trying to keep rolling. I was like, this is ridiculous.
Crazy.
Yeah, it was nuts. But it was, and no walk-ins too. So we had to like, store crabs across the street at like Pepper Citizen, and that's when the diner was just opening, so they had to walk in there.
That's
so
right. Yeah.
I was in the best shape of my life because I would just carry like two bushels of crabs under my shoulder, just running down Upshur in like running shoes, like back to the restaurant.
People are just asking, like, hey, do you do water polo?
I was like, nah, bro, crab shack, baby. Crab shack life. I think Alexis still talks. She's like, your arms look good, like with dad strength, but
yeah,
they're not Crab Shack. I was like, yeah, I don't smell like shit anymore, so I'll take that.
So Alexis has been actually like a big, basically your partner in for a good number of steps in the past couple of years, and I guess we hear stories all the time of people kind of couples going into business together in restaurants, and I would say more often than not it doesn't work out. Like, was there anything particular that you can say like off the top of your mind that made you guys different?
I still remember like the first time she met me. And I was like doing some consulting in a restaurant, and it was a little bar that she was working at. And somebody made a comment to her, and she's like, "Who?" So she's like, "You don't know who Johnny Spiro is?" She's like, "No, I don't give a shit who Johnny Spiro is." And I think that was the moment I was like, "All right, this is gonna work."
Yeah.
Because she's like, she loves the industry, but it's not. I don't think it's the same. Like, I'm like incredibly passionate about it, and, like, it's all I want. And for her, she's like, it's a way that we can provide a way of life for our family, and like that's how it was with her. I mean, now she's. She helps us like some private events for the restaurant, but mainly now like her job is to raise our daughter, and like that's
she's a great bartender. I worked with her for a very short period. She was great.
She talks about it every once in a while, like just going back for like a night just to do it, because I think she misses like the service aspect of it, like being able to talk to people. Because whenever she comes to the restaurant with Fiona to eat dinner, she always sits at the bar. I mean she loves hospitality and just. In that sense of it, I don't know if it was like her end goal to be like a bartender, but she's like great at it. So in a pinch, I might tell her she's got to go work behind the bar, you know, one night a week to kind of check it out. But I think she's getting that itch again. I mean, she's been at home with Fiona for over a year now, and she comes to the restaurant every day, and she tries to do as much work as she can, like on a computer. But Fiona just like grabs everything she can, so it makes it like super hard. But yeah, I don't know. I know a lot of people that have. I mean, you look at like John and Jill, like they crush it. Now, I've seen, like, other people that go into business together and it, like, tears their marriage apart, and it's interesting. I think it's just because, like, we have two different, like, reasons for being in the industry, and it's, I think, like, the passion thing, and, like, that's how I push myself and her looking at it as, like, all right, let's make it, like, a financially sound business.
Yeah.
I think those together, like, it's the passion and the profit, like, together. Like, you need that to make a business work, and I think that's where our focuses lie. I obviously care about profit because I'm the restaurant owner and I can't just fuck it, foie and truffles on everything.
Yeah.
Is Fiona going to be growing up in the restaurant, or is it going to be another story?
I don't know. I keep saying I want it to be another story because I don't want it to be that same, you know, the only time she's going to see her dad is if she's at the restaurant and she grew up like serving tables. You hear like all those industry kids, like that's how they grew up. So I'm trying to balance out the whole work-life thing, and she's too young to know that, like, I'm not always there, but I'm aware that I'm not always there, so just trying to find a way to, like, not have to spend 14 to 16 hours, you know, a day at the restaurant. Like, for now, like, it's great. We have a pack and play in the back. Like, she comes there and hangs out, and, like, my entire staff has seen her from the time she was, like, born to, like, almost walking now. But I think she'll get a lot out of, like, being around the restaurant. I don't want her to, like, to grow up into it. I mean, if she wants to be there, that's cool. But I don't want her to be, like, forced into, like, family time at the restaurant because that's the only time dad's going to be able to see you. Like,
right.
I think part of it is, like, learning to – and I'm learning time management. Is like, am I better at 10 hours a day and just, like, shutting everything down and just, like, doing that? Or do I feel like I have, like, this – badge of honor to work, like, those 16-hour shifts? Because I feel like that's kind of how a lot of the industry is. Like, everyone wants to, like, talk about how long they were at work. I'm like, well, how much did you accomplish in that time versus somebody else that can, like, just hyper-focus at 10 hours?
Absolutely.
So, I haven't found that solution yet. I'm still working on it, but that's my goal, is, like, not have my daughter just completely raised in a restaurant. I think it's good, because I think everybody should spend some time in the service industry and see it, and it's, like, that is my passion. It's, like, they're my family, but she's like my actual blood. I don't want her to like look at the restaurant like an extension of her house right now. In her mind, she probably thinks it's like her nursery because she like sleeps there all the time.
Right. The smells will resonate with her for the rest of her life.
Yeah. I remember one of the first times she came to dinner and she was like crying. I just took her into the back, into the dish pit. And I think like the white noise of the machine like just lulled her to sleep. So I always remember that. Like I think maybe that will always be like something like subconsciously in her. Like the sound of the restaurant calms her down a little bit. So we'll see. She hasn't done that in a while. Yeah. But
what, the cursing in the background doesn't lull her to sleep?
I think so. Just like, yeah, just like screaming bloody murder at people. That just eases her pain.
Well, let's take a step away for a second. We're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, we'll dive a little bit deeper. But we're here with Johnny Sparrow of Reverie. I'm Matthew Ramsey.
I'm Eddie Kim.
And thanks for listening.
Shift Drink.
Allow me to read the introduce myself. My name is Hov. H to the O-V. I used to move snowflakes by the O-C. I guess even back then you can call me CEO of the R-O-C. Fresh out the frying pan into the fire. I be the music biz number one supplier. Fly it in a piece of paper, bear my name. Got the hottest chick in the game, wearing my chain. That's right, Hov. Not D-O-C, but simple love to the letters. No one could do it better. I check chatter like a food inspector. Only trick told me, dude, finish your breakfast. That's what I'ma do, take you back to the dude with the Lexus. Fast forward the juice and the necklace. Let me tell you dudes what I do to protect this. Shoot at you actors like movie directors. Play the movie, dog.
Before I finish, did not come here to show out. Did not come here to improve. Cause to tell you the truth, I'll leave you here.
Complex. I never claim to have wings on, nigga, I keep my by any means on. Whenever there's a drought, get your umbrellas out, because that's when I brainstorm. You can blame Sean, but I ain't invent the game. I just rolled the dice trying to get some
And I do it twice, ain't no sense in me. I ain't as if I am a different man. And I can blame my environment, but there's no reason why I be buying expensive chains. Hope you don't think users are the only abusers. Niggas getting high within the game. If you do, then how would you explain 10 years moves still alive is in my veins.
All right. Thanks for coming back and listening.
Okay, we're rusty.
You're still listening. Great.
You're listening to Shift Drink on Full Service Radio at Adams Morgan. We're here with Johnny Sparrow. That's Johnny with two N's.
That is correct. Yeah. And an H. That throws me off.
Just
awesome
want to make sure. We're here with Matthew Ramsey, Johnny Sparrow of Reverie in Georgetown. I think, I'll be honest, like, part of your reputation in the town, it's like you've had a lot of ups and downs in the industry, yeah. Particularly in DC. What would you say is like the biggest highs and the biggest lows, and how they've connected each other, what you've learned from them, you know, just the big picture essentially.
Yeah, I mean, I look back now and I look at all the little things that I've done here and there, and knowing that I wouldn't have Reverie if it wasn't for a lot of that stuff. And one of the, I think probably like the biggest low looking back now is probably my first restaurant I opened when I was 26, and then I closed it when I was 27, and I was Suna in Eastern Market, and we opened up, I'm trying to remember, it was like I think we opened up in October, which is oddly enough like the same time we opened up Reverie, and then we closed it maybe, I think by March of the following year. It just, it was interesting. I'd been like a sous chef, but I never actually run my own restaurant. I think one of the biggest things that I didn't understand was that it's like such a collaborative effort to make a restaurant work. And I didn't have like a full, I had an idea of what I wanted, and I don't think I took enough time to like figure it out. But I didn't know that when I was going into it, someone's like, hey, let's open a restaurant. You're like, fuck, all right, cool, let's do it. I just got back from living in Chilhowee, Virginia with John Shields.
Yeah.
He's got Smith in Chicago, who's like my culinary mentor. And I was like so motivated to get into a kitchen and do something. And it was like tasting menu only, 4A courses. And I loved what we were doing there. But even now I look back, I'm like, you know, I could have worked a little bit more to kind of refine it and also take criticism a little bit better and like work with my partners. It was a whole weird thing. I just don't think I was ready to own and operate a space, especially like in working with somebody else. Because for me, I thought it was like, you know, it was my idea. It was my food. I wanted it to be like a very like one way. But also thinking that I never took anybody else's perspective on what the restaurant could have been. That could have made it like entirely different, like for the better or the worse. But I was not willing to really even like have a conversation about it. But that kind of threw me for a loop. I spent all this time and I was like just thinking that's how I was going to spend the rest of my life. Like 10 years, maybe not that was going to last longer than 10 years. But that the restaurant would have lasted 10 years or so. And that would have like put me on this trajectory. And then all of a sudden within like a week's time, it's like, nope. We're closing the restaurant, and then, you know, the Tuesday we closed the restaurant, the last service was on a Saturday, and then that Tuesday after I had like just gone out and gotten like completely like just entirely fucked up, it was rough, and I woke up on Tuesday with like a bunch of text messages, and everyone was like, sorry. And I was like, oh yeah, the restaurant closed, like I get that. They're like, oh, you didn't see the review. I was like, oh, So I go open my phone up and I see like the half star review from the post, and it was just like, you know, I was already down. And it's like, how, like, where else can I go? But I mean, I was already like on the ground, like in the fetal position, yeah. Like hungover as shit. And it's like, all right, let me just like stop on your throat a little bit, and like, and it hurt. But there was a lot of people that like reached out. And they're like, you know, it's, don't take it personally. It was, you know, whatever. I mean, who knows what happened? It was a crazy time. But that was a moment where I actually like took a step back and tried to figure out like what did I do wrong, yeah. And what it was. But that was also just like, cool, I'm just gonna like go into like this, you know, bender for like a week and just get entirely way too drunk and not feel stuff, because I was like, that's like the reason why a lot of us drink. It's like, just go numb, because when you don't really have to like think about how things hit you emotionally if you're just drunk and having a good time. Yeah. So
was there like a romanticism in there and having operating the restaurant, basically shouldering a lot of it on yourself, that you didn't reach out?
Yeah, I mean, it was a super small restaurant. It was like 30 something seats, and I was we didn't really have a general manager. We had, you know, there was a lot of people that were involved in it, but I felt like it was my baby, and I didn't really know how to like nurture and help it grow. And I don't know if I think maybe I might have looked at it as like a point of weakness, like if I had told somebody I didn't know what I was doing, because I had like this entire staff below me that was, you know, expecting me to have all these answers. And I was like, well, I don't know. I barely even know how to like read like a P&L.
Right.
We mentioned P&Ls earlier.
Yeah. and so now it's a skill set that we all bang our heads on the wall for.
Yeah, like we understand it, but it's, I mean, and I'm glad that I understand it now. Like it's not my greatest strength, but I think that's also the one thing that I learned too, is recognizing what I'm good at, and also more so recognizing what I'm terrible at, because then you find people that can help you with that. And I didn't put it out there like, hey, I have no idea how to keep this cost in line, or how do I like cost out this recipe properly. Like, I have an idea, but I don't really know. And it was just, yeah, it was a lot. And I think I let it like kind of fester, and just I think what most of us do, like, we just kind of keep pushing it down, burying it. And it was like literally 2 weeks after I closed the restaurant, I ended up going and being the like staging at Mini Bar for like the head chef position. So I was like going from like losing everything to, all right, here's this opportunity. I didn't want to leave DC because I felt like I'd dedicated like so much time and effort into like investing in myself to being here, that I was like, all right, cool. Like it was right after they had moved to the new location. I think I worked for like almost like 2 weeks for free, just like showing up every day just to like get an idea for it. One, because I had nothing else to do. I just closed the restaurant. So
this is your Bradley Cooper moment of, yeah, shucking oysters.
Yeah.
Can we never mention that movie ever?
I remember it was like Jose was like in and out of Spain. They're like, oh, we'll sit down and talk. And I was just like, I mean, if I don't do this, what am I going to do? Because there was nothing. I had talked to some other people, and I was like, I mean, there's always a job. But it was, like, for me, it had always been, what would make me feel good? Like, what would I be happy and proud to say that I work at? So it's kind of crazy that like the lowest and one of the highest points of my career all happened within 2 weeks of each other.
That was your high when you...
Yeah, I mean, the fact that I thought I was like complete shit and had lost everything. And then after working with Jose and like, I mean, just like stopping at the restaurant and then like sitting down with him for like an hour, and basically him just asking like these random people, like, we're hiring this guy, right? And they're like, yeah, of course. And I was like, oh, okay. So it was like a little like reaffirmation that I was not terrible. And that definitely made me feel good. It also helped me bury all that shit that had just happened, which wasn't healthy. And that's actually probably the reason why I ended up leaving Mini Bar too. Like, if none of that stuff had happened up to the time me getting there, like, I might still be working there. I have no idea. But it was after like 2 years of being there, I realized I'd never really like allowed all that shit to hit me and feel what really like what it felt to like lose it all and start questioning myself like creatively. And I was like, okay, I need to get out of DC for a little bit. Like, I never left because I think I was so comfortable, and but I think I just never really let myself like really feel what it was like to lose that, and kind of how, like, how do I move forward if I ignored that. So I had actually, it was like right before I opened Suna, I had applied to stage at Mugaritz, yeah. Which had like always been like super inspiring to me. Like, I loved, like, I was obsessed with that book. And just Andoni was the chef that I looked up to the most, and like me and John Shields were like, just, I'm like, do you see this new dish they're doing? It was wild. And then I was like, fuck it, I'm gonna go to Spain. So I'd interviewed with them, or I sent like a...
I'm sure that garnered Jose's seal of approval.
As soon as I told him I was leaving, and I'm like, but I'm going to Spain. If I had said I was leaving to go work for like Isabella, he probably would have like thrown me out the window.
Yeah.
But we had a talk, and I was like, listen, like, I think it's time for me to like get out and like see something else, and I want to go to Spain. Like, Mugaritz had been that place that I wanted to go for my entire career, and I was like, I'm almost 30. and I don't know how long I'll be able to like keep up with like a bunch of like 18-year-old kids running around the kitchen. So that was probably like one of the other high points.
Almost 30, Matthew.
All right, easy.
I'm 33 now, so I was like 29, about to turn 30, and I went to go stage at Mugger Eats, which was another high point. I mean, there's definitely a lot of high points, and I guess I've had a lot of up and down since then, but like I think the low point was towards the end of Minibar, where it's just like not questioning if I made did the right thing going to Minibar. I was like, did I make a mistake not just like leaving and like feeling everything? But yeah, going to San Sebastian was probably like one of the most like pivotal points in my career too, because I was like, okay, I want my own restaurant again. I want to do this. So if I didn't go to Minibar, I probably would have never gone to Mugger Eats, and I never would have come back to DC.
I mean, I think that's the thing, that when you're in the lows, that you don't realize that the highs are often not that far away. They just require some adjusting and pivoting. And
to be honest, like your menu, I took a second look at it a moment ago, and yeah, it pretty much is a biography of everything.
Yeah, I mean, that's what everyone asks about the restaurant. I think it's the hardest thing for me to put into words, especially like trying to open a restaurant. Everyone's like, well, what's Reverie going to be? And you're like, well, modern American, because then I can say do whatever I want. And that doesn't give anybody like a clear picture of what it is. But in reality, that's what the food is. It's like, it's me. It shows like where I've been and like who I am. But
it's your voice.
Yeah. I think it's hard. Like, we're not Spanish or Italian or French or Japanese, but you see a lot of that on there. Like, it's there in a way. I don't know. It's interesting.
Biographical.
And we have a burger too.
Yeah.
So I just had my first. Elizabeth is from Wisconsin, so I had my first Butterburger.
Oh.
Rather recently, within the last year or two. So awesome.
In Wisconsin.
In Wisconsin.
Where'd you go?
So. They're north of Appleton. So,
okay.
I mean, we were going to a lake, and it was like on the drive up to Ed Carver's. But
oh yeah, there's a. I remember I went out to Milwaukee, and it was like the first place that Justin Carlisle from Arden took us was this place called Solly's, and it was like this divey little spot, and it was like smash burger style, which is like my favorite.
Yeah.
And they have like just like six pans lined up of tempered butter. And I'm like, okay, so I didn't really look too much into like what a Butterburger was. I'm like, I have my assumptions, and like smash patty, just like, but then like a fucking like ice cream scoop of butter onto it, and I was like, oh my god, this is gonna be just like, I'm like, I don't know how this is gonna do. I mean, I might like it. I remember Alexis was with me, and she's like, this is gonna be the most disgusting thing ever. So they put the burgers down in front of us. It's like Justin, me, and Alexis, and we're talking. Like the butter's melting, and it's like pulling on the plate. And I look over at Alexis. And her hands are empty. She's just looking at the plate. There's not a drop of butter. She's like, I can't believe I just did that. And just like crushed it. Like that's, it's people right.
I'm putting that on the list, but yeah.
People put loads of bacon, like all this other shit.
Yeah. Like, and I mean, I was having a, you know, like your French style sandwich yesterday where they, you know, lather it in butter and you got the pickle and the ham and God, it's so fucking good though.
Yeah. I mean, it was like Wisconsin butter, real, real good. So we do a version of that, but it's, yeah, oh, yeah. I just like I dream about that, but I also like, I don't know.
So the burger at Reverie is a Butter Burger. I mean, you did a pop up.
We did a pop up where occasionally we don't do it on the menu. Like we have it's all of our dry aged ribeye, mix it with a little bit of chuck because otherwise it'd be too fatty. We make smoked cheddar into American cheese with that like modernist cuisine technique. Our pickles are, so it's misozuke, so we bear cucumbers and miso, a little bit of Carolina gold rice vinegar, mirin and sake, and let it go for like a week, and then onions stewed in butter, so there's no color. It's like 5 pounds of butter into a whole bunch of like thinly sliced onions and just barely cooked, so they hold on to all this residual butter. So
fancy.
It's probably, and then smoked, then we make our special sauce, our burger sauce, starts with smoked eggs.
Oh, nice.
So it's probably like one of the most time-consuming dishes we have on the menu. It's a burger, but it's also like we talk about the restaurant. Like, you shouldn't alienate anybody from coming into your restaurant. Like, if my dad can come in and like have a burger at the restaurant and like feel good, I'm like, all right, we did it. Like, we didn't tell an entire like crowd of people. I'm like, I don't know if you're gonna like eating here.
I love it.
I actually like crushed a burger inside the cooler the other day. Like, I was working the station, made a burger, and just stuck my head inside the fridge and just like ate it in two bites. It was fantastic.
Well, time-wise, we should probably jump to our last game, a little thing we call Rapid Fire.
Okay.
Time for the payback.
Rapid Fire.
So we were just talking about burgers. What is your favorite condiment?
Favorite condiment? On a burger or just in general?
Yeah, just in general.
Andy Nelson's in Phoenix, Maryland has like this, I get it all the time, but it's like this North Carolina style, like mustard barbecue sauce. It's like a little bit of vinegar, a little bit of mustard, and I just put that on everything when I have it handy.
What's the weirdest thing you put it on?
Weirdest thing I ever put it on. I tried it on pizza once. Hey, wasn't that great?
Hey, hey, PG.
And that's where Fiona came from. No. No, it's, not good on pizza. That's when I still drank.
Oh, let's keep talking about burgers. Other than America, where else have you had your best burger?
I don't know if it's the best, but it amazes me that no matter where I travel in the world, whether it's Japan, Copenhagen, or Spain, that Big Macs always taste the same.
So well. Actually, I had Big Mac for breakfast today.
It's something that I take.
I had Popeyes.
Yeah,
they didn't have the chicken sandwich. I had to go to my standard.
No, that's always my thing. I was like, let's go to McDonald's. Well, when I was in Spain, I didn't have any money, so we go shopping, and I need a Big Mac, and it tasted exactly the same.
So. Well, if you're cooking at home, then what junk food are you going to be eating while you wait?
Sour Patch Kids.
I feel like sour candy in kitchens are like it's.
It's
one
a thing.
Of the best combinations. I don't know why, but it works, and everybody always craves it.
That's why I have like so many cavities. My mouth is terrible.
Let's do this one. Worst cut in graphic detail.
No, we haven't done that in a while.
When I was 16 years old, I was hungover and a little high, and I was cutting onions on a meat slicer.
Oh.
Somebody called my name. I turned my head, and I was still like. It just like put my thumb through it, but I was fast enough to like just move it so the blade just like nicked the bone, so it cut through the tip and then just like
bubble gum.
But the best part was I was just sitting there bleeding, and my brother was a busboy at the time, and I'm just like holding my finger trying to hold the wound closed. Oof. And my brother's got a bus bin like a full of dishes. He's like, can you get out of the fucking way? I was like, I'm like my arm's covered in blood.
Family.
Ah.
Oh, I feel bad about my little cut. Most influential cookbook in your collection?
Ooh. Also, it changes a lot, but lately the one book that I keep going back to is Ronnie Imborg, who was the chef at AOC, and now he's at Aterra. But before he left Copenhagen to come to the States, he put out a book called The Wizard's Cookbook, and he very much has like his own style, and I think he's like one of the most. I don't want to really talk about him that much, like throughout the States, but I think he's probably influenced more people's food than they know, like stylistically. He's like the perfect, like modern Copenhagen, New Spain collaboration. His food's awesome and magical, and he's at Aterra now, and it's incredible. But I constantly just find myself just grabbing that book back. So, The Wizard's Cookbook by Ronnie Imborg.
Deathbed meal.
Deathbed meal. Ugh. What are we even talking about? I feel like it's probably a Big Mac at this point. Like nothing else. I mean, there is one meal that I feel like it's between the Big Mac and then my grandmother used to make like she was from Latvia and she was a refugee and she just cooked like peasant food, which is like roast pork with knedel. A knedel was just like a bread dumpling, so it was like old stale bread, just poached and like pork jus.
Ooh.
It was like. But I don't know, the Big Mac always wins. It's unfortunate that it just like takes like,
I don't,
it overshadows any kind of like so family good. History
I
or
hate
like
that it's so good.
Yeah.
By the way, I believe McDonald's has a 2 for $3 deal this week, so
I can't tell you the last time I had a Big Mac. It was probably like right when the restaurant opened. Like
I
hold out. It's like
I wish I had your will.
When was the last time you had a Cholito?
It was a couple weeks ago. Somebody had my brother got me a Cholito when he was in town. I did his wedding party for him at the restaurant. And as payment, there was money exchanged, but I got Cholitos. So
nice.
It's been too long. I need to visit Meats and Foods more frequently.
Well, Johnny, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you for providing this lovely Polar Seltzer Jr. for me.
How many dragons had to die for these whispers?
Six, I think.
Per case or can?
It's one dragon per can.
Ooh.
Listeners, you can revisit this week's episodes or previous episodes on iTunes or wherever you grab your podcasts, including the Spotify. And find us on all the social medias as @ShiftDrinkDC.
@ShiftDrinkDC. Don't forget to throw us a review on iTunes or give us a 1-star review on Yelp. A special thank you to Jeffrey Lamoureux for intro music and DJ RecTech for our hilarious sound effects. Next week, we bring back another AOC, our very own, in Congress.
Ms. Cortez. We're going to be talking about her favorite condiments.
Please come on our show. Please. We're talking about bartender stuff. You actually... She tweeted something out recently. She really is the bartender's bartender. She reminded everyone that it was daylight savings.
Make sure you weren't getting caught.
And make sure you bartenders, make sure you're getting that extra hour's worth of hourly pay.
Yeah.
Even though if it's like $3, make sure, you know, fucking count your hours. Good for her.
Money. Yeah. Gotta make that money.
All right. Until next week, AOC. Thank you.
Thanks, Johnny.
You're welcome. Okay.